This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. We tape in the offices of Raider, which offers a complete fleet of IT solutions for businesses of all sizes. Raider's motto is, "You just want it to work, we understand." If you're wondering if Raider can help your business, please visit RaiderSolutions.com. I'd also like to thank Iberia Bank for its support. Founded in 1887, Iberia Bank is the largest bank based in Louisiana and is headquartered in Lafayette with 325 combined locations throughout the South. They offer the resources of a national bank with the personal touch of a community bank. Please visit iberiabank.com for more information. And lastly, thank you for the support of Lafayette General Health. As Acadiana's largest nonprofit, community-owned regional health system, Lafayette General Health is committed to restoring, maintaining, and improving health in the communities it serves. For more information, visit LafayetteGeneral.com. Our guest today is Matt Stuller, founder and chairman of Stuller Settings, the largest jewelry manufacturing and distributing firm in the U.S. Stuller is celebrating its 50th year in business and was incorporated on November 12, 1970. A Lafayette native, Matt began his career as a junior in high school, working part-time for a local jeweler. He worked his way into the business of doing jewelry repair and sales, and in his senior year, he began his own business and ran it out of his father, Dr. Gilbert Stuller's orthodontic suite. At the age of 19, Matt developed his first wholesale line and began traveling throughout Louisiana, developing business connections. Frustrated with the industry's slow delivery and service, he developed a business model to supply quality merchandise and service with next-day delivery. And I understand that today, hundreds of thousands of pieces go out pretty much daily to 40,000 businesses around the world. Matt Stuller is a good steward, and he believes in giving back to others. The Stuller Family Foundation partners with a number of nonprofits which deliver humanitarian, youth, religious, and educational services. Matt is also the driving force behind the recently launched Parish Proud, whose goal is to work with community partners to eliminate chronic blight and litter, to promote and invest in beautification initiatives, and to educate all of us on the economic, environmental, and social cost of blight and litter. Matt Stuller, I'm honored to welcome you to Discover Lafayette. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you, Jan.
Yeah.
I've been looking forward to doing this.
Yeah.
So let's have some fun.
Let's have some fun. So first of all, before we started, we did a little video blurb, and I was asking you about jewelry and what was a good gift. And I could tell in your answer, and I'll let people watch the video so they can hear that, but I can tell that you still have a passion for this, the business that you got into 50 years ago.
Well, I do. You know, the jewelry business is a lot of fun, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of excitement. You know, it's giving beautiful gifts mm-hmm. of God's greatest creations of gold and platinum and silver with the most beautiful of gemstones
right.
that are truly created, you know, in the inner earth. And we get to be, you know, artists in building beautiful jewelry mm-hmm. and being able to distribute it to people, jewelers, to be able to celebrate life events.
Right.
And then what's really exciting is, you know, we get to build product and it's multi-generational. So you can hand mm-hmm. it down to your children, your family, your friends. It never gets old.
We just did that in our family. My mother-in-law, Betty Swift, recently passed away at the age of 96, and there were four granddaughters. And so the sons, you know, her three sons went through the jewelry and kind of had it valued and then let the four girls figure out what they wanted. And Matt, it was so funny. Nobody fought over any of the pieces. Some of them liked, you know, the necklaces. My daughter, Taylor, wanted the big, she likes the big rings that kind of, you know, reminiscent of the 60s. And my daughter, Kelly, wanted more pearls and more classic. And it was so funny how each piece, though, evoked an emotional response from them because they remembered their grandmother wearing them. And that's what you sell, right? It's emotional.
We're selling passion and emotion and really fun gifts.
Yeah.
I don't know of any other industry that gets to work with such great, noble, you know, products and then to be able to celebrate life events.
Right. Now, you started your business. People probably know your story. I know you sold out of your car, you traveled, you started in your dad's office, Dr. Gilbert Stuller. Can you go back and just talk about that? What was your family's thoughts when you said, I'm sure you were breaking loose from what the family tradition might have expected of you. What did your family think about you as a young Matt telling them about your dream?
Well, you know, my parents always knew that I had a lot of energy and I love to work. But I wasn't a good student. It wasn't that I was smart, but it was the fact that I just wanted to do a lot of other things in book learning. So I struggled through high school. Even today when I go into schools, you know, the hair raises on the back of my neck. I can't say that I had great experiences in school, even though I'd love to say that I would have much preferred to have a very formal education, which I did not. So when I came to my parents right out of high school, literally a week out of high school, and I announced to them, you know, that I was going into business, and I told them what I was doing, they were extraordinarily just flabbergasted by disappointment. My mother, you know, was an English teacher. She was very prim and proper, well-educated. My dad, you know, was a doctor, a DDS, specializing in orthodontistry for, at that time, just children. And they thought that my, you know, best opportunities in life would be to go to school. My mother used to always tell me, you know, you better get your grades up or, you know, you're going to go out and be collecting garbage. Well, if she only knew how much money was in garbage today.
And that you do want to pick up garbage and make it a better town.
And I am picking it up almost every day. Yes. So, you know, there was this kind of insight, you know, of I wanted to prove them wrong. I wasn't going to fail because they were so worried that I was going to fail. And then you compound that, you know, the first time I went to New York, which was 1971, and I shared, you know, with many of the jewelry experts in the field of what my plan was, they kind of laughed and says, Matthew, you can't do that in Lafayette, Louisiana.
Really?
You have no train labor. You can't manufacture down there. This distribution of overnight and getting it out in the mail the same day, and particularly, you know, with a smile. They said, you know, you outgrow that very quickly and you'll never be able to maintain that service level that you've described. And I think that that was kind of the, you know, cementing of my persistence of not failing.
Right. You never wanted to take their advice and move to New York or a larger place. I mean, did you think about that?
So... I mean, no. I mean, how could you move when you live in the best place in the world?
That's what this podcast is about. Thank you for getting in that plug. I wonder, because, you know, that probably, did that phase you at all? Or were you just not hell-bent? I don't want to use that kind of term, but were you really determined, I'm going to stay here at my family, you know, where my family is? Was that a tough decision?
Well, no, it really wasn't. Certainly, it would have been easier, you know, as FedEx and UPS Air started. It would have been better in Memphis or certainly in a city where they had a large talent pool of jewelry manufacturing or diamond setting. But I was determined that we needed to do it here.
And you were about 20.
No, I was actually 18.
You were 18 when that happened. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Gosh. And, you know, thinking back in those days, I mean, so young, and I'm sure they looked at you like, well, good luck, son. You know, we'll see what happens. So how did it go? How did you, do you mind just sharing some of that? Were you making the jewelry yourself? Were you actually designing, or what was that process like in the early days?
You know, I always look at, you know, God's gifts, and I also like to what I call what God gives us in crosses to keep us humble. But I was very, still am, very mechanically inclined. I love working with my hands, good eye-to-hand coordination. And while I was in high school, you know, I worked at a local jeweler and working with the craftsperson in the back of the store. And so he taught me the basics of sizing rings and polishing, stone setting and things of that nature. And that is really where I fell in love with the business. And I wanted to go out and actually buy componentries, what we call settings or findings, and go to people like myself in the jewelry market and sell them those parts for further repair or for custom work. And that's when I really fell in love, you know, with a mom and pop, if you will, the independent jeweler, is that they were so kind to me. I mean, they'd see this young kid coming in, had a big bag of stuff pulling out of my trunk of my car. And often they really didn't need anything, but they always bought something from me to give me an opportunity to be successful. And I'll never forget that. They'd always say, son, you know, what do you got? You know, bring it in. Let me see it. So, you know, they were very helpful in my career, and that was where the real passion of serving the small independent jeweler came from. So it was difficult. You know, I had no money. I certainly didn't have any support, financial support from my parents, not to mention that they couldn't give it to me with raising five children. But, you know, you started very small, and I was buying product and going out into the market, selling it and collecting the money and rebuying, you know, and building it on margin. And then very soon after, I took my dad's dental lab and I converted that to making jewelry in it.
That's pretty cool.
Then I started, you know, I was buying product and I was also now selling what I made. And that is really, you know, where my niche was. I knew that that is what I wanted to do
so
the rest of my life. So I started hiring one jeweler at a time that had some jewelry experience. And, you know, from there we got into a strong training program and started training, you know, people on how to be able to manufacture. And then it was years later where we weren't just manufacturing the same stuff. We started getting into design and creating, you know, the artistic side of jewelry. And it really has been just a phenomenal run. Difficult? Absolutely. Should I quit many times? I should have. But I had that determination, like we talked about earlier, where I was not going to fail because of my parents. I was not going to fail in the industry because I was going to prove everybody wrong. And it was easier here than I think doing it elsewhere in the United States. You know, worldwide, we have an incredible reputation at Stellar about service. And there's a great quality that we have here in Acadiana. Well, we have people, you know, that really care, is that they like to please. They will do what you ask them. And so the customer service aspect of that friendliness and being passionate to other people, you know, being Christian based, was really, really helpful in building our reputation and living to what we were committed and promising. And when we do fail in quality or service, you know, we have this heartfelt hurt that we've disappointed somebody. And that makes a huge difference when you do have an error, you know, in your process. So I don't think we could have ever built the company with the customer service side of it and not do it as well than right here, you know, in Acadiana.
So you, just to clarify, you don't have any retail outlets. It's purely wholesale manufacture and delivery. And so you deal with all these different jewelry stores and I guess jewelry concerns around the world. Are many of them like our local jewelers here, like Paul's Jewelry or, you know, some of the small family owned? Is that still what you see or is that market changing as times have changed with internet sales?
Well, certainly all of the local jewelers have been very good to us. And it's a convenience for them because they don't have something in their case. You know, they literally can drive down the street and not wait to have it come in from somewhere else in either America or the world. But, you know, Stellar had to diversify over the years. So, you know, we certainly sell, you know, most all of the independents in North America and many around the world. You know, but we also sell, you know, the majors, the large chain stores, the catalog showrooms, still a few, TV networks.
You do.
And certainly now, you know, which is a very big business, you know, is in the dot-com business. So we sell most everybody, and we sell the folks, you know, in the high-line business of the Tiffany's and the Cartier's, you know, and the fine jewelry companies, to tools and parts and batteries, you know, all the way down, you know, to the small mm-hmm. watch shop or to the jewelry repair center.
Mm-hmm. Have the through the years that you've been doing this, the past 49, almost 50 years, have the taste and the look of, let's say, wedding rings and basic pieces of jewelry, has that changed that much? What people liked, let's say, in 1970 or 71, would that still be pretty much what people would want today? Like, what have you seen as you've been in the business the past decades?
Well, I think the most important part in talking change, because everything changes, mm-hmm. no matter how we do things, and certainly design and style. Mm-hmm. But the change has happened so much quicker today than it's ever been before. You know, the trends on jewelry design used to cycle about every 7 years. And it was okay to be able to take a year to make a catalog, you know, and get mm-hmm. it out into the market after 2 years of design and concept. But today, you know, you can have trends that are changing multiple times in a year. So you have to be very fast
wow.
in the marketplace.
Yeah, whatever the Kardashians have on or yeah. for young women.
Yeah. Now, for the most part, it's still basic jewelry. You know, mm-hmm. it's rings, it's pendants, it's earrings. You know, but today, you know, body jewelry, you know, they're wearing it from their toes, you know, to their noses. We're not that deep into the body jewelry side, but people are wearing jewelry very differently than they've done
right.
in the past. Certainly colors and carats have changed. Mm-hmm. You know, when gold peaked, you know, back in the day at $1,800 an ounce, everything either got lighter or it went to silver mm-hmm. Or it went to lower carat. So where 18 and 14 carat was very popular, it moved down to 10 carat mm-hmm. under FTC guidelines. You couldn't call it gold unless it was 10 carat or above, which is about 42% gold.
Okay.
Today, the FTC has changed their rulings, you know, and you can call, you know, jewelry down in the even lower caratages than that. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the big change over the last few years, you know, and although it has been produced for decades, and that is, you know, the lab-grown diamonds versus the mined diamond.
Oh.
And lab-grown is grown, you know, in a lab, you know, by man, by people. But it has the same, you know, substance of a real diamond. So it's as hard, it has the reflective index, uh-huh. Has the same, you know, weight. It's just grown in a lab versus in a mine.
Are they valued the same?
No, they are valued differently, you know, and that's still yet to be seen. Mm-hmm. It usually is a percentage under the mined diamond market. And that is fluctuating. The problem with, you know, man-made is, if you will, it could turn into a widget and you can just produce more
right,
of it.
Right.
So it will be interesting to see.
I didn't know anything about that. I guess that's like making granite or something. I always think it would have to be a natural substance that was forged, but wow.
Well, it is forged. Mm-hmm. It is natural diamond. It is just sourced from a different way.
Right, right. You know, when you were talking about the value of gold, I remember as I was growing up, I don't know if it's just I was ignorant, but I always thought gold, like I would wear, I didn't have a lot of fine jewelry, but I would wear gold. And as I got older, I saw people wearing more silver, and it must have been what you were talking about, values. And I would never mix jewelry. I still have that mindset of I don't feel comfortable mixing gold and silver, the look, but I know people wear just about everything, you know. But
well, today mixing colors and carats are very, very popular.
I'm just so matchy-matchy. I don't know.
We know. Just
my girls say.
Just an interesting twist on this thing. You know, when I went to New York in 71 and was telling my peers what I was planning on doing, they said, you know, Matt, you're just getting into the business at the wrong time. And I said, well, why is that? And they said, well, you know, gold is $40 an ounce. You know, it was considered to be a strategic metal through the wars. And they're releasing that, you know, and gold, you know, may go to $100 an ounce. And if it goes to $100 an ounce, no one will ever buy gold jewelry. And of course, I considered that to be a realism, you know, and that was a concern. And certainly that had not slowed it down.
Right, right. Isn't that interesting how, you know, things have changed over the years? Well, before we move on, I want to ask about your parents as they were older. And I know you've lost both your mom and your dad. At the end of their lives, did y'all talk about, you know, much? I know they must have been so proud of you for the success that you've built. And I'm sure they also saw when you started giving back to the community. But what, you know, what was that relationship like once you proved that I'm going to do this, I'm in it for the long haul?
Well, I think they were very excited, you know, that I stuck with it, particularly during the difficult times. But, you know, as we being parents, we're always proud of our children. And certainly they were as proud of me as, you know, my other, you know, four siblings. But yes, indeed, it was, you know, they had the opportunities to do some travel with me. My dad loved to buy jewelry, you know, for my mother. And it was really, really good just to feel satisfied that I could carry, you know, this mission out. There's nothing better, I think, for a child is to make your parents proud. And I was certainly excited in order to be able to make my parents, you know, very proud of me.
I know that you've also made your community very proud. I want to commend you for staying here and employing so many people. What is your current number of employees, if you can share that?
Well, you know, currently in Lafayette, you know, we're about 1,250 employees. And, you know, over the years, you know, I used to always worry about selling jewelry, you know, and, you know, then as you get older, you really start to realize the responsibility, you know, of all of these folks. And, you know, for the most of them, I believe that they really, really are career-oriented. They want to learn the trade. They love the jewelry business, you know, like I do. And it's cool to be able to see then the generations come into being with our associates. You know, we have a lot of daughters and sons, even now, you know, grandchildren that are in the company. We have a major celebration every quarter for the anniversaries, you know, within the company. And I'm just shocked to see the amount of 30 and 40-year-old, the 20, 25-year veterans within, you know, our business. And they are truly the ones, you know, that drive the business, you know. You know, leadership is very important to create the culture and to be able to drive it. But it's really the people of what really makes it happen. You know, and today as a business, you know, owner, whether it's selling jewelry like us, you know, or operating any other business, it's all about talent. You got to have great talent. And sometimes, which is my most difficult, you know, is to have to get rid of people who are not the talent, you know, that we need in a very changing dynamic, you know, business.
I know I read in one of your interviews that it's not just about employees, but their family, you know, and they have families. And I know you take that very seriously. But yeah, I'm sure sometimes people in any business just aren't the right fit, and it doesn't serve anybody well to maintain that relationship. But you've got so many. When I visited your offices, the several times I've been there, I've just been amazed at the what your office looks like. For people that are listening to this and haven't seen the inside of Stoller, it's magnificent. It's a fortress, which I guess it has to be.
Yeah, we're kind of like the Gold Knox of, of the South. But, you know, it goes both ways, you know, with associates. You know, we have people that have literally improved themselves and have outgrown Stoller. And they have to move on in order to be able to maximize the opportunities to earn a living and, you know, to grow their families and, you know, the lifestyles, you know. And then the most difficult, you know, things for us is when the company outgrows the associate. That's the most difficult. And I think we have a good culture today of change. You know, because every business has to be dynamic, and they have to be changing not for the sake of changing, but they have to stay in change to stay up with the marketplaces. And there's a lot of people that struggle, you know, with constant change. And those are the ones that generally the company outruns them, you know, and that's the difficult time.
Right.
But it really is all about great talent and operating a great company. Mm-hmm. And I think we're the best in the jewelry industry worldwide. I certainly know we have the best service and the reputation worldwide. And that's kind of my style and my goal. You know, I'm not interested, you know, you've seen these ads, you know, on the LSU game last night. It's mm-hmm. not okay to be okay.
Right.
And I've never, you know, embellished, you know, moderation or me, you know, I mean, I want to be wide open and deep mm-hmm. into it or not at all.
You want the elevator to go all the way to the where it should be, right, and not stop halfway.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, very fast.
Next day delivery. Well, I know at least one of your children works with your company. I was reading the blog online, and I read Alex. Is it Alexandra?
Yes.
Yeah, Graham. And I loved some of her writings, but she was so proud of you. And do any other family members work with you in the company, or is it just Alex?
Well, I have three children. Mm-hmm. Alex is the oldest, and she's been with the company now going on 7 years. She, by the way, was a creative writer, and I went to school for that.
She's got a beautiful writing style.
Just yeah. beautiful. And she's heading up now, you know, our bridal business, mm-hmm. Which is a very, very big business for us. And she's just doing a super job. And obviously, you know, I don't have to worry about her being loyal. She is, you know, extraordinarily loyal. But the most important thing about Alex, you know, is that she is a career, you know, she wants to be in mm-hmm. the business for the rest of her life. And that gives me great comfort. My youngest, Lauren, is in the jewelry business, but she has a lot of me, you know, in her. She went to school for gemology, jewelry manufacturing, jewelry design. I was thinking she'd come back to work, you know, for Stuller, and she decided that she wanted to go out and do it herself.
Ah.
So she started out, you know, in California, and doing very well in a dot-com business. Mm-hmm. And she said that, you know, as soon as I can buy her for $100 million, she'd move back to town.
I like that style. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I know you're proud of her. Yeah. A little friendly competition, huh?
Yeah. You know, and then my middle child, my son, Matthew, he has come to work for Stuller a couple of few times, but he's so passionate on hunting and fishing. You know, that when the hunting season starts, it, like, he just gets starry-eyed, you know, and the walls are closing in on him, you know, and yeah. he says, you know, Dad, I need off. And I said, you can't take off, you know, you're an employee of the company. So hopefully he'll come back. He, like me, is very mechanically minded. I think he would do really super in the manufacturing side of Stuller, which is an incredible, important part of being able to make, you know, and distribute product. So, you know, I've got my hopes up that all Good. Three children will be in the business.
Right. You're lucky to be close with them. We feel the same blessed about our two daughters. You know, there's just nothing like that love for your children.
So oh, my goodness.
Thank you for sharing that. Well, I have a quote. I'd like to segue, if we may, into your community involvement. And this was something that I read and pulled from Alex's blog on Stuller.com, and it's your quote, "Improving our community isn't just about dollars. It's about ideas. It's about relationships. It's about putting aside our respective egos and agendas for the greater good. It's about caring for others and helping each of us reach our maximum potential." And so I know your first endeavor in giving back is with your Stuller Family Foundation, which is, you have Scott Brasta as your executive director, and you guys have done so much giving back to the community, helping nonprofits. And I know it's not about supporting sports teams. It's about looking at youth potential for growing educational opportunities. Would you like to share some of that? What got you to start your foundation?
Well, I guess 20 or 25 years ago now, as I was working through my own Christian faith, I realized that part of the responsibility of being a Christian was to tithe. And so I committed at that time to commit 10% of all of my earnings and putting it into the foundation and being able to support others. And that's really how it all got started. And it's really interesting. You know, I get so much more satisfaction of investing money in others and giving them opportunities that they may not have otherwise. Mm-hmm. So it's fun. You know, I love building churches and like building schools, you know, and supporting, you know, as a foundation, solely and only 501(c) organizations. But it's been a very important part of my life. And I am educating, and my children are now in the foundation as well, making the decisions to be able to carry it on to the next generations.
Right. And another endeavor that I know is close to your heart is Parish Proud, which people can go to parishproud.org and find out more about this. But in October of last year, you had a large event, UCC and others, Sky Rurido, others that work with you. There was a big launch to get the community involved in having pride and taking care of our community. I know that beautification has been long been a concern of yours. I've seen you at different events I went to over the years when I work with Upper Lafayette, and you're invested both financially and your heart, I know, in getting us to all realize why we need to keep our community clean and beautify it and take ownership of where we live. If you can share some of those thoughts.
Well, you know, it started years back when I was a small child, and my dad and I, you know, lived in the Atchafalaya Basin, you know, fishing and hunting. And at that time, that was in the 50s, it was still trashy. And then as a Boy Scout, I realized that I really had to do something about it, you know, and I'm an Eagle Scout, you know, and we're always, you know, having troops go out and clean. And I'd love to say that it's a lot better today than it was in the past, but it really isn't. When you compare it to many of the cities throughout America, quite frankly, many countries around the world, Louisiana, and particularly Lafayette Parish, it's a pretty dirty city, and planning and designing doesn't take place for beautification. Mm-hmm. It just is to get it done. Mm-hmm. And so this has been kind of, you know, some heartstrings that have been tugging on me that if I was going to do something in my lifetime in regards to litter and beautification to the greatest city in the world, you know, that I really needed to crank this thing up. Mm-hmm. So Scar and I had gotten together. I did not know her before. And she taught me that, you know, listen, for beautification, it's not just litter. You know, as you mentioned, it's blight. You know, it's working with the city and better planning and zoning. Mm-hmm. You know, it's about the litter, you know, what we call litter signs, the signs on sticks. It's about, you know, the high grass and the mediums and the boulevards. But it really is, you know, I think in order to be able to show the government that we're serious about this, it needs to be the general population that are saying this is really important to us. And we've got to go out and not only finance it, you know, but there's a lot of volunteers doing their individual things. So I call Parish Proud kind of a service-centric type of thing. You know, I mean, we don't have the armies to send out, but we certainly have a lot of partners that are involved in their own unique things of beautifying the parish. So we're working, you know, in that angle. It, you know, it's like two big, what I call pie plates that we're spinning all of the time. You know, one of it, and the most important lasting thing, is what I would describe as behavioral change. You know, is that we have to really behave differently. And we have to be proud about our community, like we're proud of so many other things, of being friendly and our food and our music and things of this nature. But we just don't have that pride, you know, as far as living in a beautiful place. And I've always said, you know, we shouldn't have to live in other people's garbage, you know, and we should, you know, enjoy bringing people from outside of our community or our state or our country and be proud of where we live, you know, and that's not the case today. So we're making a big effort. You know, we invite, you know, everyone and anyone to become volunteers by signing up on parishproud.org. This is, you know, not a spectator sport. Mm-hmm. You know, we're doing a lot of, you know, advertising and marketing today, both, you know, on TV, soon to be radio, and social media in regards to the behavioral change concepts, how to report litter, how to report ugliness within our communities, how to get it people involved, whether it's the school kids, you know, all the way through the elderly. And then the other side of that pie plate, you know, of spinning it, you know, is then, you know, the mediation of being able to go out and get it clean. Mm-hmm. You know, we know by surveys is that one piece of litter on the ground gives permission to everyone else mm-hmm. to throw a piece as well. And so we've got to clean it up. We've got to, you know, realize that, you know, cigarette butts takes 10 years to be able to disintegrate. We have to understand how bad litter and ugliness is within our community, from property values to crime, mm-hmm. To, you know, the economics of bringing, you know, new companies in and keeping companies here, mm-hmm. bringing talent in. And just for the mere simple part is we should be very proud of where we live.
Right.
And so that's the whole game plan on Parish Proud. So I really invite the listeners to join up. Mm-hmm. We'll find out what you really like, what your passions, you know, and we'll get you involved.
Right. I think please go to the website. You'll probably see yourself somewhere in there, whether you're a volunteer or someone that litters and doesn't even realize it. You know, it might be the person who has a pickup truck and throws things in the back and you're not realizing they're flying out. Or you might be the truck driver of the garbage truck and don't realize that litter's flying out. There's so many ways that we litter, and there's so many ways that we can stop and pick it up and make this community and the parish one to be proud of. So,
boy, we are so much in sync. Yeah. That's great.
I love this. I love it. And we could talk about this for days. We have Jason Sikora with us here. I know our time is winding down. Did you have any questions today, Jason?
I could talk and interview for another half hour, but I know we're out of time. So just a couple comments. First of all, I love your passion for everything that you do, whether it's jewelry or beautification of the city. It really comes across, and it's important. So thank you. Yeah, and if you want to do a trash pickup with Raider Solutions, and maybe we'll grab Art Hawkins from the Boy Scouts and, mm-hmm. you know, go clean up Camellia or something like that. We've done that before at Raider Solutions and just gone out there for a day. And then I typically throw a pool party just to thank everybody. So there might be some sort of synergy there. There's a great documentary called Explained on Netflix, and one of the episodes is about diamonds and man-made diamonds. I highly recommend people watch it because it's very interesting. And then finally, I really liked the fact that you talked about passing down jewelry. My wife loves her grandma's diamond ring, and it's just a treasure. So thank you for mentioning that. Thank you for being here today. I know Chris Rader's going to want to say hi before you leave. And then Jan, of course, thank you for allowing me to at least comment.
This has been a pleasure today.
And if you come back, I have all sorts of questions. So, but I know our time is limited, but thank you.
Well, I'd love to come back anytime I'm invited.
Good. Okay, you got it.
And I would like to say this, you know, as I sat down for this interview, I saw an envelope in front of me, and Chris is very generous. And we received a $1,000 investment from Raider Solutions to be able to help, you know, our mission, you know, in beautifying our city. So I'd really love to thank Chris on the air and tell him how much we appreciate, you know, Raider and all the good things that you guys do.
Thank you. Chris is fantastic.
Yeah, you all are. Thanks to Raider. I want to say Raider Solutions. It's Raider.
It's Raider Solutions, but it's branded as Raider. So.
Yeah, Jason, thank you so much for taping the show. Matt Stoller, for being here. I want to thank our listeners for supporting Discover Lafayette, and in particular, Iberia Bank and Lafayette General for its support. On behalf of Discover Lafayette, this is Jan Swift.